Thank you very much, Christian. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the NCSG Monthly Policy Call on Monday, 27th November 2017 at 2200 UTC. On the call today, we have Benjamin Akimoyoje, Farrell Foley, Fazani Badi, Ishan Mehta, Aiden Ferdinand, Juan Mano Roja, Kathy Kleiman, Luis Marie Hurrell, Rafik Damak, Romina Florencia Cabrera, Indiana Kropina. We have apologies for Gangahad Pandey. And from staff, we have myself, Mariam Bakoshi. I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you, Rafik.
Thanks, Mariam, and thanks for everyone to join today's call. So, maybe as a reminder, to explain about the background, this monthly NCAG policy call, it's usually held before the General Council call in the same week. And what we try usually to do is to go through the Council agenda so we can discuss about the motion that they are being tabled for voting. And so that's an opportunity to give an update and to discuss with membership. And then we go on the second part of the agenda is to get more update about policy from working groups, review teams, and so on. So we will start then with the first part of the agenda, and you will see soon the General Council agenda. This time we have several motions to be voted, I think four or five. Some of them are quite straightforward, but others maybe need more discussion and to see how we should vote on them, because we may have some concern. Okay. The first item of the agenda is mostly regarding administrative matters. And it's just like, for example, to approve the previous council meetings minutes. So we can move to a more substantive agenda item. And it's item number four. And this is to vote to adopt the GNSO response to the GAG communique, and that to be submitted for ICANN board. So to give background here, the GNSO Council has adopted a practice to give a feedback or input to the ICANN board regarding the GAG communique in the way that to explain the GNSO position regarding several policy development process. And it focuses only on what the CAC may add to the communique regarding GNSO PDP. So what happens usually is that response is drafted by a small drafting team. I'm not sure who was from NCSG there, but that's how we saw that. The drafting team try to go through the communique, and they are following some templates as to select items of relevance for the GSO and try usually and mostly to remind the GAC about what was done in terms of policy and really to stick to the process. And also just maybe to remind of what it was done previously, because what happens many times is just the CAC keep raising the same concern or when they are not really happy with the outcome of policy development process. So if you have any question or comment on this. Yes, Kathy, please go ahead.
Hi. Great lead-in, Rafik. Oh, let me mute my speaker here. Okay, so my question for you, Rafik, and for other people on the council is some of the GAC advice is a little crazy, especially when we're looking at the privacy issues. Are we allowed to raise questions with the GAC? Like, are they telling ICANN to ignore the GDPR? There's a very one-sided piece of it starts on page 11 and goes on, and what I'm really concerned about is on page 12 of the GAC communique. And the GAC, and I don't believe it's the whole GAC. I don't think they had a good presentation of the GDPR, but I could be wrong. You guys were in Abu Dhabi. But the GAC, which is really the Public Safety Working Group, appears to be directing ICANN to ignore the GDPR as much as possible. And to continue to seek public availability of the WHOIS data, of all, you know, all this privacy data of both individuals as well as nonprofit organizations, political groups, et cetera, you know, racial groups, ethnic groups, sexual groups, all that. And the GAC appears to be directing ICANN through consensus policy, which, again, I'm not sure I believe, to, quote, keeping WHOIS quickly accessible to the public. To the public, guys, this is exactly what the GDPR says you can't do. And so can we raise questions about this? Because there's all sorts of legal advice now to the working group that is working on the RDS, the new WHOIS, as well as other things that say, the GDPR says we can't keep this public, and we have to be really careful about who we give this data to and under what circumstances and even what we collect. So I'm really concerned about this GAC advice, and I kind of wonder how it got there and whether the GAC really understood what it was doing. I mean, is it advising ICANN to tell the registries and registrars to violate the new European law? Thanks.
Thanks, Kathy, for the question. So the GNSO response is not really directed to the GAC, but it's to the board. Because what happened is usually the board has a call with the GAC after ICANN meeting to discuss about their communique. And one thing that GNSO Council did is to try to give update and feedback beforehand. So what we are responding, and now I'm checking, I will share, I'm not sure if it's the link is shared or not, but if someone can check the mailing list of the council and share the link, it will be really helpful. But reading the response, the response from GNSO, we are reminding them that there is the RDS working group and that the work done there, and that the working group solicited input from CCTLD registry operator and how they are complying with GDPR, and also regarding the legal counsel. But I think definitely that the response is quite maybe reserved. It's not really responding to all what the GAC is saying in its communique. I think it's understandable because since the GNSO, we have different stakeholder group and constituency. I guess that probably that was the least common denominator that we can agree on regarding GDPR. But indeed, what the communique is including is quite concerning as a GAC advice to the board. So in terms of action here, I don't think we can add more to the GNSO response, but I think this is more how we can use other channel maybe to respond in detail and maybe more assertively to the GAC. I see that Aiden is in the queue. Yes, Aiden, please go ahead.
Thank you for that. Hi, everyone. This is Aiden Fudlin for the record. And I wanted to respond to your comment there, Rafiq, but also to Kathy. Firstly, to Kathy, I agree. The communique that the GAC communique was not ideal. The language that they used, particularly in relation to privacy in the GDPR, was highly problematic. And there was also just a huge disconnect between what we said to the GAC when we had our bilateral, the NCUC and the GAC, and what we actually saw come out of the communique. And what I think is even more problematic is that three members of the GAC I'd spoken with since then, and they happened to think that their communique was very helpful for us, which makes me wonder what was the level of comprehension based upon what we said? How do we communicate our message when we're not clear enough as to what it was that we wanted? Because there seems to be the impression that some members of the GAC are under that they have really helped us with this communique when really we don't particularly like the phrasing. But I also agree with Rafiq that I don't know that the council is a way through which we can address this, because I'm still new to the GNSO Council. I'm still getting the ropes of how it works. But one thing that has come across very clearly from some of the emails that other members of the leadership team have sent is that we need to really remain, we need to do our best to make statements that say absolutely nothing at all. I'm paraphrasing here, but, and I say that slightly in jest, but the impression I'm getting is that we have to, given the need to have consensus as many different stakeholder groups coming together, there's very little that we can say, and certainly nothing that could be seen to support the positions of one stakeholder group over another. So I'm not sure that for the council we would be able to respond in any way that would be meaningful, but perhaps piggyback off of the idea that Fazane put in the chat, that maybe we need to continue having the discussion with the GAC. Maybe we need to schedule another bilateral at the next meeting, for instance, to keep this conversation flowing. Maybe that is the best path forward. But thank you for flagging this, Kathy, because it's certainly problematic. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Aidan, for the comment. Just maybe quickly, I'm not sure if we can really wait till the next meeting in March, since, I mean, the deadline for GDPR will be quite close then. So I guess we need maybe to explore the different way how we can interact with the GAC, and also maybe to make clear the position regarding the GDPR, maybe more specifically, and try not just the GAC as a group, but maybe also to reach the different GAC members. Yes, Kathy, please go ahead.
One thing that it might be very useful if you could get attached to the GNSO response to the board, as you pointed out, this is going to the board, not to the GAC, which is important, is that the Council of Europe created a memo just before the Abu Dhabi meeting called Privacy, I'll put it into the chat, Privacy and Data Protection Principles Guide for ICANN-related data processing. It's the first time we actually have kind of an official legal interpretation as related directly to the who is. And it would be very useful if you could attach that to, again, I'll put all the references into the chat, if you could get that attached to what's going up to the board and see if you can raise questions, because what is coming out of the GAC is, you know, we need to ask, you know, somebody needs to say, do we have to follow the law? And so attaching this memo would be very useful for it to come officially from the GNSO Council. And to Aidan's point, as much as I'd love to, Aidan, I'm not sure we're going to – the GAC needs to start listening to some of its own members. It's only hearing kind of a one-sided view. I wish they'd listen to the Council of Europe and other, you know, and data protection commissioners who came to talk with them. I'm not sure what we can do if they won't even listen to their own law enforcement officers, but we can try. I'll put the reference into this memo. It would be very, very cool if you could get this attached from the GNSO Council up to the board by way of information. Thanks.
Thanks, Kathy. Any further comment about the GNSO response to the GAC communique? Okay, so I guess that we will vote to approve this communique. We can raise all the comments that we heard, but in general, I think that what we get, it's usual response from the GNSO. It's the spirit is just really to remind about the policy development process and really to push the CAC to respect that the outcome of the process and to avoid that the advice just trying to circumvent what the community spend time to work on. So that's again what every time our response do, and it includes a lot of reference of the work that was already done and so on. So in many times it's really just repeating what was said before, unfortunately. So okay, so any comment on this? Any question? Okay, I guess we can move maybe to the next agenda item. And this is another motion for voting, which is the referral of the privacy and proxy services issue related to IRTPC to the to the implementation review team. So my understanding from this issue is that the registrar, there is a concern regarding the application of inter-registrar transfer policy C and the care for the case of privacy and proxy services. And they try, I mean, they are asking that the implementation review team to cover that issue. To do work there and to use the common period for that purpose, and also to work with the registrar and other impacted party, asking them to join that review team to work on that discussion. So it's basically, unfortunately, maybe it's that in one issue, maybe it was not, and probably it was not foreseen at that time because IRTPC predate the work on the proxy and privacy service. So I don't see a particular issue here to asking implementation review team to work on this issue, either in term of process or in term of substance. But I think it's mostly really a question for the few members from NCSG who get involved on the privacy and proxy services. I'm not sure who is in the implementation review team, which usually involve only who should involve only who not only but mainly those who were who participated in the previously in the working group. So we didn't have that much discussion in the council list about this. And I didn't see any particular concern. It seems it's a topic of interest for the for registrar, and they are pushing for it. So probably there was some problems here. But so I think from our side, I don't see a particular issue. So, but unless someone, and yes, Aiden, like Stephanie, who is involved there, I'm not sure if there is a specific problem. So. Any question or comment on this? I'm going to share the link to the motion so you can read the text because it gives some details about the background and also some links to report and material regarding this issue. Okay, don't see that much comment, but I assume for now that unless we hear a particular concern, I think we will ask Stephanie. I guess we can think we will vote yes for this motion, but just we will double check in case if there is any something hidden or a problem that we were not aware about. Okay, so the next motion. Which is about the confirmation of GNSO representative to the Empowered Community Administration. at the ICANN meeting in Abu Dhabi, one of the first, I think, action of the new council was to have the GENASO chair, Heather Forrest, appointed as interim representative to the Empowered Community Administration. So just as a reminder, the Empowered Community is a result of the ICANN accountability or ICANN reform. And so we have the representative from the GENASO and also from other SO and ACs. After that, I mean, Heather was appointed as interim representative. One of the actions is that the GENASO leadership, which means the chair and the vice chair of GENASO, they had to discuss among themselves who should be representative there. And because I think, if I'm not mistaken, I'm not sure if it's already in our operating procedure or not, that the representative from GENASO should be selected from the GENASO leadership. So as GENASO vice chair, and discussing with my colleagues in the GENASO leadership, we thought that it makes sense to have Heather as a representative there. I think that, it makes sense. I don't see any reason that someone else to be there. And at the end, the representative, he or she doesn't have much to say. It's basically just he or she need to consult with the GENASO and so with the council regarding any decision or items put for discussion. So it's just it's kind of mostly administrative work. So I think this motion is also quite straightforward, just kind of to confirm the selection by the GENASO council leadership. So, any question or comment on this? Okay, I don't see any. Okay. So, the next agenda item, and I think the last motion to be voted, is something that, it's an item for discussion that was there for several times, but we didn't reach a closure. But this time, it's, I think, maybe one attempt to get this done. And this is about the modification to the procedure that implement the HUI's conflict with privacy law policy. And so it's regarding legal opinion trigger. There was the implementation advisory group that worked on this issue of who is conflict with the privacy law, and I think they proposed that there may be several process in how to handle this inconsistency between what I can get as a policy for who he is, and national and local law. So I don't want to put someone on the spot here, but since Aidan worked on the NCAG comment, I think it was in July, regarding the last comment on this issue, maybe he can give better insight about the problem, and also maybe if he has any thought about what is proposed in the motion from contracted party. But just, I think, something to highlight that at least one group, which is intellectual property constituency, they are proposing a significant change to what we have in the motion as maybe a solution to move forward. So, Aidan, can you speak on this?
Of course. Hi, everyone. Aidan, certainly, for the record. So, Just to follow up on what Rafiq said, that's absolutely correct. Back in July, as the NCHG, we submitted a statement on this. And essentially what we said was that we had considered the revised procedure that ICANN had put forward for handling who is conflicts of privacy law, and that we did not think that it was practical or feasible. And there are a number of reasons for that, and we also put forward an alternative ourselves. And so the reasons why we didn't think, essentially the alternative trigger that ICANN put forward was that a registry or registrar could present to ICANN a written statement from a government agency that certified the agency had the legal authority to enforce data protection law in that jurisdiction, and that they had analyzed the contract between the registry and registrar and ICANN and found that there were inconsistencies between national law and the contractual obligations. And what we said in our comment was that that is entirely unrealistic to expect an independent regulator to provide advisory opinions on private contracts. It's certainly not going to happen in the European Union. I don't know if it would happen in other jurisdictions, but the Europe, where I have some knowledge, this just not, it's not going to happen. The data protection authorities defend their independence fiercely. They set their own priorities. You cannot write to them and expect them to analyze a private contract. And even if that was something that they would do, you cannot compel them to respond. You cannot compel them to respond to a letter quickly. It's not clear what documents would have to provide the government agency in the first place so that they could form a relevant opinion. Not experts in ICANN policy. They're already overburdened. We also just thought it would be a huge burden upon smaller registries and registrars. If you already think that you do not comply with data protection law, do you really want to attract the attention of a regulator who has the power to impose substantial fines over you? We saw this with Amsterdam recently, where they did write to the Dutch DPA and then got instead of getting this procedure conducted, they got a letter informing them that they were not in compliance, meeting their legal obligations in the Netherlands. But there are many other flaws with this alternative trigger that ICANN had put forward. And so we wrote and we expressed our opposition. We said that we didn't think it was going to work, but we did come up with a solution instead. And what we said was that ICANN could implement the global best known practice in data protection itself, complying good faith with the European Union's GDPR, and this would be the best solution. And we also said, you know, it's not unusual for ICANN to implement best practices that go above and beyond applicable law. Look at trademark protection in the DNS, for instance. And so we said, we don't have any qualms about requesting that ICANN implement the global best practice in the matter of protection of personal data. So we submitted this comment. ICANN didn't consider our comment at all, at least in the staff report that came out. Of course, they acknowledged receiving it, but they certainly did not take our recommendation forward back in July. But they didn't really take any of the alternative recommendations that came forward. Nothing really resulted there. Anyway, to what we have on the agenda today, the IPC has put forward two alternative triggers. The first one, is certainly not one that I support. The first one they put forward is a written legal opinion. So in the apps, a registry or registrar can present to ICANN a written legal opinion from a national law firm or attorney in good standing that that says the ICANN contract violates data protection law. And to me, that's not particularly suitable because it's already been considered by the IAG, I think, 2 years ago. A large number of reasons have been published for why it was not suitable. And so to circumvent the IAG, I think, would be a bad practice. Now, the second trigger that has been put forward is a previously granted waiver I don't really have any issues with myself, but I would be curious to hear what others think. And so the previously granted waiver is, say, for instance, that another in the same jurisdiction that you're operating in, another registry or registrar has received a waiver saying that, for instance, for registries and registrars in the European Union, because of this .amsterdam letter that has come in, they can use that and piggyback off of that to say that for their jurisdiction, because they're in the same jurisdiction, if that decision has been made, it applies to them as well. And I think that is actually quite a quite workable. But I would like to hear other thoughts as well. I don't think it's the best approach. I don't think it goes far enough because you still need that initial decision in the first place. I think that our recommendation from July of simply complying with the GDPR would be the best path forward. But as far as alternative triggers go, I do think that alternative trigger number two that the IPC has put forward strikes me as quite sensible. The chair of the GENSO Council has written enthusiastically on this, supporting it. it's very impartial there. So that seems to be where some of the leadership team of the GENSO Council think we should be going. Again, I do think it's quite sensible, but I really would like to hear from others if there is something in there that I haven't seen. I hope this is helpful. If there are any questions, anything you'd like me to clarify, happy to do so. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Aidan. Just to clarify, I think the two alternatives were suggested by Keith, but either, I think, acting as IPC counselor, she was asking to remove the first trigger, and she added other language to the second one. So, and that's, I think, what will happen. I mean, the issue, one of the issues is that it's kind of an amendment, and she didn't have time to discuss with Keith and kind of negotiate the language here. So I am wondering what will happen during the call. I'm not seeing any update in the council list yet, and so it kind of, it will be really late coming to the council and discussing about all these details in the call. So from our end, we have to be ready and to see how
could I make a very small clarification?
Sorry, who is speaking here?
Sorry, it's me, Rafiq, Aidan.
Okay, it was you, Aidan. I'm sorry for someone else. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I just wanted to clarify something very quickly. You're right. It was Keith that put the motion forward, and then Heather did put a clarification forward. And I think the clarification is very reasonable. The edit she made was to insert the language after a reasonable opportunity for public comment. I think that modification is very appropriate. I just wanted to clarify that. Thanks.
Thanks, Aidan. Yeah, I mean, just my point was that we need to be sure how, as a counselor, we should act during the council call if it's there is some discussion about the language. So we need to be careful because we won't have that much time. But yeah, if we think that it's fine and it's acceptable, I think that will help us anyway. Yes, Kathy, please go ahead.
Hi, this is Kathy. So I'm still trying to figure out whether the edits, it doesn't look like the edits are in the version that we're linking to. So this language, adding a reasonable opportunity for public comment in this particular case may create a delay of months before the registries and before the registrars and then the thick who is registries can respond. So one question I have is how does what is proposed by the GNSO Council, what might be adopted, this week. How does that correlate with the new ICANN proclamation from the CEO that you can ask for a waiver? There's a different set of rules now in place that you can ask for a waiver based on the GDPR, provided you provide your plan. And I'm not sure that has a reasonable opportunity for public comment. What concerns me here, as much as I love transparency, is again, that opportunity for delay. So let's say the registrar down the street from you has the waiver, and you are submitting based on the fact that they're in the same city, same state, same, you know, country, that you're going to follow the same rules that the data protection commissioner of that country has decreed. I don't know why that has to go out for public comment. It may delay you by, you know, they're going to ask for a long public comment. They're going to ask for reply comments. This will be delayed by certain parties in ICANN as long as possible, so 60 days, 90 days. And in the meantime, you can get fined for violation. So the idea that a business has to comply with legal obligations immediately, as soon as it knows of those obligations, you don't have to ask the world whether they agree with that, because a lot of the world will disagree, but you still have to do what you have to do legally. So I just raised that. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Kathy. I just posted the latest language regarding the trigger number two, but I don't think that we mean here that the public comment will happen for each registry asking, but I think it will happen once, and so it may apply for everyone in the same case. That's my kind of my reading of that trigger, but maybe Aiden has more in insight about this. Yes, Aiden, please go ahead.
Thanks, Rafiq. Aiden Fatalin for the record. I think you're right, and I wasn't clear a few minutes ago. I think you're right that it's just a one-time thing, but I think this is also consistent, actually, with something that we argued for in our comment back in July. Back in July, we said that regardless of whatever mechanism comes into play, we want there to be a consultation step in which all interested parties can review what written statement has been submitted in that notification step and to comment on all aspects on it. And we said it, that comments from the community have an important role to play in ICANN's bottom-up decision-making processes. But we also said that we wanted to see guidelines and a procedure developed so that we can understand how ICANN staff analyze the comments which are received. We certainly don't want commenting to become a form of filibustering, but I think broadly, the idea that we should be able to comment on issues like this isn't important, and also that we should be able to review the correspondence that other parties send in relation here. So nothing should be happening behind closed doors. Any of the correspondence that is sent should be public as part of this request for public comment. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Aiden. Kathy, you want to comment on this?
Yeah, the language that you posted, Rafiq, this is Kathy, does not say what you wanted it to say. It actually, if I read it correctly, and ors and ands make a big difference here, in this particular case, they added the public comment to the latter thing that we were talking about. Let me explain. So it says, if it was previously determined that a provision in the RAA or other contractual obligation conflicted with applicable law, and the registry or registrar is subject to the same applicable law statute and to the same contractual obligation, then they're putting in the public comment. So this means that the next guy down the street is going to be, I can't imagine the registries and registrars will want this change, and I think you can support them. Putting something out for public comment when your neighbor, your registry or registrar down the street already is allowed to comply with the GDPR and you're not, and making it subject to general review once it's already been approved, again, for the guy down the street, it's people are going to wind up getting huge fines on this. It's not really fair. So I would, keep the language that says and to the same contractual obligation and request taking out after reasonable opportunity for public comment on the request. The request has already been granted to the guy down the street. There's no reason it shouldn't be granted to the guy up the street. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Kathy. So just, I think you could notice that those in capital letter are the amendments proposed by Heather. So, I mean, because it was Thanksgiving, I think, last week, so there was no really discussion on the proposed language from any back from the contracted party. So we have really no idea about their position on about those changes. So if they accept them, I'm not sure how much how much room we have here to react or to influence the language. So I hear your suggestion. Looking forward maybe for more comments, maybe not in this call, unfortunately. I don't see me because she was one of our member in that group, but I think let's see how the negotiation I think will happen maybe between who submitted the motion and who is asking for the amendment, so and see how it will go. Because if the submitter accept the amendments, we have that much room to do any change. And any further comment or question on this?
Yeah, Rafiq, this is Kathy again. Don't amendments have to be voted on separately?
They are only put for vote if they are not accepted as friendly. And I'm not sure here because I'm not sure to see them in the motion themselves. So, but yes, only the amendments were not accepted, then they are put for vote. But if they are accepted, they are not. They are not subjects to vote.
So Keith accepted these?
Keith is the person who submitted the motion. So if there is any suggestion to amend the motion, it will be up to him and the person who seconded the motion to accept them as friendly or not. If they are accepted as friendly, we will only end up to vote in that latest version, either to approve it or not. I mean, to approve the motion. If the amendments are not accepted as friendly, so they will be put for a vote.
Okay. Thanks. I hope he does not accept them as friendly so that you have some more opportunity to work on it. Thanks.
So, I mean, the only point, I didn't also put in the chat, so there was no discussion between Heather and Keith, so it's kind of tricky for us here. Because usually what happens is that when there is amendment, they usually try to work out that before the council calls. So let's see how it will be unfolded. And so I think we can have maybe more opportunities to either suggest our own changes or not. So, but yes. Okay. So if there is no further comment, we can move to the next agenda item. And this is now it will be about council discussion, and it's an update on the General Council strategic planning session. So the General Council will have a three-day face-to-face strategic session in next January. And this is, it will be the first time to have such a meeting. And the idea is really kind of to that the Genasso Council to more, to be more strategical and to do the planning for the year. So we are starting as a new council. We have several new members, and we have a lot of challenges to handle for the coming months. And I think one of the goals here is kind of to maybe to have a common understanding within the council regarding the role of the Genasso Council with regard to the operating procedure, to regard to our role to the empowered community and so on, and also having discussion, for example, about the role of the liaison to the different working group and so on. So we have now a draft agenda that was introduced a few weeks ago, and the council list and is still kind of under, we can say that, it's under construction. So I have to review the latest version, and also we have to add more points regarding the objectives and the goals expected from each part of the agenda. So it's kind of a new exercise for us, really, in the council. I'm not sure how what will be the outcome of those 3 days, but there are a lot of expectation from them, and at least think that we can get the council to do better planning. And the meeting will be facilitated. So there are several details that are being worked out now currently. So hopefully I can provide more information soon, and we can probably get better insight during the council call. So there is so much to share for now. There's still many things still under discussion. We only have the kind of the draft agenda. So if someone can share it, I'm not sure I can I can do the search for now. But that's it for just kind of we will get an update about that meeting. Any question or inquiry about this? And thanks, Ada. It's really helpful. Yes, Aidan, please go ahead.
Thanks, Ricky. Aidan, put a link to the record. So I've just shared what I think is the link in the chat, and hopefully it's not a different document, but I think it's the right one. So as you can see, it's certainly a busy 3 days that has been planned. On day one, it's an 8 a.m. start with the finish. So we're certainly trying to do as much as we can over the 3 days in this strategic planning session. As you can see, it's about discussing roles and responsibilities of councillors. This over the next year, we're going to spend 16 days to get what do we want to achieve in the next 12 months. I think it's obviously subject to change, but what I would find very helpful, if there's anyone else on this call or anyone else in the NCHG who has ideas on what we should be focusing on for the next 12 months, please do feed them back to us. I have an idea as to what my own personal professional goals are, and I think we all do, but do I know what you think is important for us to be doing as the councillors that you've elected to Genasso Council? Not necessarily. So any ideas on what you think we should be focusing on next year, please feed them back, and we'll see if there is a way to get them into the agenda for this planning session for next year. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Aidan. It will be really busy. 2 months working on this meeting. So currently the Genasso leadership is focusing on to prepare, and we are going to have several calls to prepare. So we will get more information, but yes, getting maybe more input from our members with regard to what we should focus on, General, for the coming 12 months. Just, I mean, maybe to make it clear, the Council will discuss about policy priority, since the Council is the manager of the policy development process. So we'll try to see how we can plan what's coming as policy discussion and how we can prioritize, and how also, I think this is the problem we are getting, is to get enough resources and to get the things done by the deadline. So, okay, any question or comment on this? So, moving to the next agenda item, and we are almost done with this. It's an update on the GENASO Council Standing Committee on ICANN Budget. So, there was several discussion, I think, since Johannesburg meeting about having a standing committee from the GENASO Council to work on the ICANN budget and budgeting issues in general. So, we have a draft charter. It's not approved yet, but we accepted that we have kind of that committee work on as an ad hoc basis with the members from the GENASO Council. And they kind of, after the ICANN meetings in Abu Dhabi, the a few volunteers, they focused to work on drafting a comment from the GENASO Council regarding two public comments, one about the PTI and the IAN operating plan and budget, and another one regarding the ICANN reserve fund. So they delivered, the committee delivered those two draft comments to the council. Our approach from a procedural standpoint, it's not to kind of to put them for voting, because they couldn't be submit by the deadline for material submission and motion, which is usually 10 days before the council call. By the way, if there is no objection, we can, as a council, submit them. So the one for the PTI and IANA budget, the deadline was supposed to be the 26th. And the other one, reserve fund, is the 13th. So we probably, if there is no problem, we can confirm them during the council call. But there is no voting or a motion for that. Yes, Aidan, please go ahead.
Thanks for that, Rafiq. Aidan Fodalin for the record. So I just wanted to speak briefly about one of the comments, and which was the one on the reserve fund. Last week I joined the first call for the GENASO Council Standing Committee on ICANN's budget, and we were joined by the CFO, Javier, and we will walk through the process for the HAPS was going to work moving forward, you know, provided the charter is agreed, et cetera. What can we comment on in the budget? What documents can we request, and so forth and so forth? We also worked on drafting the two documents that you see there. Now, on the draft PTI and IANA comment, I have no position on myself. I don't know enough about it. But on the reserve fund, staff produced option one, and I put forward what has been labeled as option two, which is an amendment to the staff recommendation. And so I just thought I might introduce quickly the amendment that I put forward, and that I hope it's something that that the NCSG might consider supporting. I think it's in with the NCSG comment that we've drafted on our mailing list to do with ICANN's reserve fund. The only difference is how large reserve fund we believe is appropriate. So I asked a number of questions on the call, and I asked Javier about the reserve fund, and I said that I think that 24 months would be more suitable. 24 months of a reserve fund that supported 24 months of operating expenses would be prudent. The staff recommendation is 17 months, a number of GeneSys counselors have supported a 12-month 12 months of operating expenses only, and I suggested 24 months. On the call, I was sort of told by a few other counselors that it would be unwise to have such a large reserve fund because instead the organization could put those excess funds into a specialized strategic development fund, which can accrue higher returns if we were somehow able to raise an extra 12 months of operating expenses. And that might be so. But I also put forward one of the arguments that Rafiq added to our public comment, which was that, you know, given legal and regulatory risks, and you know, what if ICAM was to receive a large GDPR fund, wouldn't it be prudent to have an extra cushion in the reserve fund? To that, I was told by someone else that if ICAM did theoretically receive such a fine, it would not be funded from the reserve fund. I said, where would it come from? And I was told, well, that would be a discussion to have at the time. So there's clearly some disagreement here as to what is the path forward, but I just wanted to sort of let you know that there is an option two on the table. It has the only difference between the staff recommendation of a 17-month operating plan that on the mailing list, one of our liaisons has suggested be lowered to 12 months. In my second option, it's just a 24 months of operating expenses is something that I think would be more prudent. Happy to hear any questions or comments that you might have here. I can certainly be persuaded if we think that 12 months is more reasonable or 17 months is more reasonable. This is not something that I have a lot of knowledge on myself. It's just when I think this out, it makes more sense to have a reserve fund than a smaller one.
So, thanks, Aidan. And also, we can notice that the discussion continues in the General Council because it seems that some part of maybe of the, I think maybe from the contracted party, they are more reserved and they are fine with the 12 months, while even very other Councillor proposing 17, so we will see how it will go during the call. The issue here is that the deadline for submitting the comments is in the same day like the call, so we need to reach some kind of consensus if we want to submit the comment. I think those two comments were kind of test or trial for the standing committee to see how they can cover those public comments regarding budget issue, because we are expecting maybe in future they will cover like the ICAN budget. And one of reasons that we behind having this standing committee is that with the new power for the empowered committee, there is expectation from the GeneSys to participate on a budget panel, something that didn't really happen before, and even in a matter like the special budget request, it was made on ad hoc basis. So it's kind of all learning experience for us. With regard to the reserve fund, we will see how it will go during the call, but I guess maybe we can find a common ground between 12 and 24, maybe we can find an acceptable number, and maybe we can see that maybe trying not to move kind of to have this big leap from maybe a few months, I'm not sure it was 7 to 12 or to 24, it's just maybe we can follow a more progressive approach. But all this is just for discussion and see how it will go there. Okay. So, any comment or question on this? Okay. So, what is remaining in the agenda is just any other business. One is just discussion of council meeting dates and rotation, so kind of administrative item. For councillor, we have the schedule for coming year for the council call, just to meet if to see if everyone is happy with that or not. But probably it's hard to get everyone happy with a call during in the middle of the night or no. So the other item, it's the update on the state of second security stability and resiliency review team, and this is more serious issue. So during the ICANN meeting in Abu Dhabi, we had that communication from the board asking the different SO and AC to pause the work of that review team. And since then, the SO and AC leaders are discussing in how to handle this and to help the review team. So it's still ongoing, and it's not that clear. It seems that other SO and AC have their concern about maybe the composition, the skills, and so on of the review team, but they are not being kind of straightforward about that. They, in the way, they are not kind of keen to put that or to write down all those issues. So it's kind of a strange situation for us, and I think it's not fair for the review team. So we will follow up with this and see how it will move, but it's just for now it will only get an update. But it's still an item for discussion for NCNG and to follow up of what we had in the Abu Dhabi meetings. Okay. Any question or inquiry about this? Okay. So since we don't have any question, we can move back to the NCAG call agenda. Okay, usually the first item is regarding public comment, and so you can see the list. There are several going on. Some of them, the deadline is coming soon. The first is, again, about the reserve fund, and the deadline for submission is the 13th of November. The comment was put for consultation in NCAG list, and just for now, I think what needs to be done is to get the clean version and the policy committee to review and endorse it for submission. I'm trying to find the list of the public comment we have. So we have a page in our wiki space with the open public comment and the volunteers. So to have an idea who is volunteering to work on the, so we have several volunteers who are working to draft the public comment. So I think the next will be, after the reserve fund, will be about IDN and diversity. So there are some of them. We have already some draft, but other I will reach the the volunteers and to work with them to get that done. Okay. Any question or comment on this? And just by the way, if anyone want to volunteer, you can see the list. Please tell me, and we can add you to that page. Any question or comment? Okay. So let's move on. So the second part is to get an update from working group of review team, and so this is opportunity for whoever is participating in a working group to give us an update or briefing, or also write any concern or issue that they think that we should pay attention. So So I'm not listing here and putting and didn't put any specific list of working groups or preview teams. So I'm opening the floor for those who are participating if they want to share with us any comment or briefing. Otherwise, I will put people on the spot. So it's better to volunteer. Seeing that Robin is in the call, and Robin, you can give us a quick update about what's going on in the working track number 5 regarding your names. So, Robin, can you speak up?
Can you hear me?
Yes,
hi, this
we
is
can
Robin.
Hear you.
Can you hear me?
Hi, this is Robin.
Okay, sorry, taking a second.
Okay, sorry, taking a second.
Are you hooked in? Yes. So Work Track 5 and the new GTLD subsequent procedures focuses on geographic names. And we had sort of a kickoff call meeting 2 weeks ago. It was very basic. And the next meeting is this week. Let me tell you exactly when it is here. Sorry, I'm a little... Okay, it's 0500 UTC on 28 November, which is tomorrow. And so I'd like to encourage folks to participate. We should have a draft terms of reference. If not out by then shortly thereafter, because that's really, you know, how we're going to get things started is with the terms of reference with the co-chairs are currently working on for that Work Track 5. So, I'd like to encourage folks to join and participate. It's at 0500 UTC on November 28th on geographic names. And actually, it's been proposed to no one's surprise that the scope has been broadened to include things like currencies and airport city codes and, you know, things that governments are sensitive about, and all sorts of things, everything under the kitchen sink, not just geographic names. So if you're concerned about protecting freedom of expression and making sure that domain name users have words available to them that the governments haven't marked off as prohibited, I would encourage you to join Work Track 5 and come to the meeting tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you, Robin, for this. It seems that what we're having here a case of mission creep. I mean, it's we're going to add more and more to the list. Not going to end, but just let us how I mean anytime how we can help on this matter, and maybe it's, even if we get more volunteer joining, is I guess mean kind of how we can coordinate our intervention and also just to act as a block and so to have more influence and just in coordinated way. Okay, thanks again, Robin, for the briefing. Any question or comment on this? Yes, Tatiana, please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Rafik. Hello, everyone. I hope you can hear me well. I wanted to suggest that maybe, perhaps, just because the work stream 2 for CCWG accountability is finished, maybe to coordinate our participation in the work track 5, because I'm also a member of this team, we can do something like monthly calls as we used to do for accountability. I know that it was Robin who was organizing this. I don't know if this would be too much of a burden for her, but maybe certainly those counselors who are participating in the work track 5 can take this over together with Robin and help her. It would be cool if we can coordinate on this, because I believe that it would be a monstrous work track. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Tatiana. Any comment on this? Okay. So, let's see if there is any other briefing from another working group. Okay, so maybe yes, Kathy, I guess about RPM.
Right. This is Kathy, and I invite Martin and Louise and anybody else participating in the Rights Protection Mechanism Working Group to add their thoughts. Just wanted to let everybody know that we've moved into the second part of our new GTLD review, where we've now started the Uniform Rapid Suspension. This is something that Robin brilliantly objected to in Sydney on behalf of the NCSG, because initially the proposal was that basically there were no rights to defend. Once you were accused, you got taken down, your dominion got taken down ultra fast, ultra quick, probably without actual notice to you. We got a lot of that balanced out later on, and now they're back to get it, you know, it's now there are people who are coming forward to try to reestablish the old uniform rapid suspension, not the one that we balanced and provided much more process to and much more fairness to, but kind of the old rules that were initially desired. So we could definitely use more participation, more voices. There are a lot of intellectual property attorneys on the line. Again, opening up to Martin and Louise and anyone else who wants to comment, but that's the Rights Protection Mechanism Working Group update. Thanks.
Thanks, Kathy. I see Aidan. Yes, Aidan, please go ahead.
Thank you, Rafiq. Aidan Fadalin for the record. I just thought I might give everyone a very quick update on where we are with who is in GDPR. So, as you might recall, the European Union General Data Protection Regulation, GDPR, is poised imminently to affect any, actually I should say, data collectors and data processes, collect, handle, and control access to personal data, such as the data contained within WHOIS records. And the common consensus in the ICANN community now is that open WHOIS records like we have today are now a thing of the past. And despite some rather polarizing and sometimes extreme viewpoints that have been expressed over the past months, especially in Abu Dhabi, as we saw a representative from the U.S. Federal Trade Commission and make some interesting consumer protection claims. Despite many polarizing viewpoints, we do seem to be at a stage now where we're trying to balance legitimate rights to privacy with a legitimate need to protect intellectual property owners, law enforcement, consumer protection groups, and so forth, who put forward, who seek to have continued access to WHOIS data. So how we go about that is what we're up to now. So in the next few weeks, we should receive the second legal memo from Hamilton. We received the first memo roughly 4 weeks ago. If you haven't read it, it's worth reading. But that was only the part one, and part two was going to be is likely to be out within the next fortnight. We can also submit questions for what is likely to be part three now. So if we do have any questions that arise out of that had not been addressed in the first or second memo, we can send them through to Teresa Swinehart and to Akram. And it's not clear how they choose which questions they will send on to be answered, but it has been communicated to us that we can submit questions and they possibly be sent through. So that is something that we might want to keep in mind if there is anything that we think has not been addressed. And I have a few questions myself that I would I will either submit in my personal capacity or I will ask the NCSG to consider supporting, depending upon what the consensus is. Already, there is a list of questions posted on the ICANN website that other stakeholder groups have put forward. Many have come in from the IPC. So we should really be thinking about getting some questions in there as well, because at least from the first memo that I've seen, and certainly from the memo that the other law firm, the Brussels law firm that produced legal advice for the RDS-TDP, I mean, the questions really shaped the response. So what we also know is that the ICANN board is trying to seek reasonable solutions to comply with the GDPR. They're trying to develop a better understanding of how they can ensure the creation of some sort of gated access RDS. So we need to keep a close eye out on that. And in the RDS working group, we've deemed over the past few weeks, maybe 2 months now, developing purpose statements that outline various purposes for the RDS, which some hope serve as a threshold requirement for data collection and access under the GDPR. As Stephanie has pointed out a few times, they might be mistaken as to whether some of these purposes would constitute a purpose under data protection law, but that's where we're at the moment. Look out for the second legal memo in the next fortnight. Any questions that come to mind, the sooner we can get them in, the better, because actually the second memo that is coming out contains answers to questions that were put forward over between after the first memo was published, and we did not submit any questions. But we are aware that the BC, the IPC, and some of the contracted parties did submit questions. I will, however, note that we were not invited to submit questions for the second memo. For some reason, they forgot to CC all of the representatives from our stakeholder group into it. Again, this goes back into the problem that's being raised in Abu Dhabi, that this internal task force for GDPR does not use an archive mailing list. You're dependent upon Teresa Swinehart to remember to email you. And for some reason, she does sometimes forget that we are a part of it. So we were not given the opportunity to comment on the questions that are shaping this part two of the memo. It will be very interesting to see what questions have been put forward. It will be very interesting to see what is said, but we do have the opportunity to submit for part three. Thanks.
Thanks, Aidan, for proposal. I guess maybe you can shepherd this this effort and try to start to collect some questions and see how we can submit them for the next legal advice or consultation. I assume that you consented for that. Thanks, Aidan. Okay. So, any comment or question? Any other update that anyone in the call can deliver? So, I think we heard from the subsequent subgroup, subsequent procedure on UGTLD, and that's for Jonas. We heard from about RPM. We heard about GDPR in general. I think that's also related to RDS. I guess that's the main policy development working group currently. With regard to the review team, that's where we need the folks who are involved with that maybe to give an update. So at least we know that for SSR2, they are paused for now, that we SOAC can work on the issues and concern raised. And for RD, I think for the who is or RDS review team, they just started, but I didn't hear a lot there. Okay. So that's mostly what I think we have for now. If there is any question or comment, please do so. Okay. That's it for policy update. Maybe we can move to any other business, and if anyone wants to bring a topic for discussion or something he wants to ask, it's a good time to do so. I know it's late in Europe and Africa. I'm not even talking about Asia. So, if there is no question or comment, I guess it's probably wise to end the call. So I'm just giving you time, guys, if you want to add something. Okay. Doesn't seem the case. So, okay. Oh, thanks, Aiden, for this. So, I guess we can adjourn the call for today. Thanks everyone for joining, and we'll try to also follow up for the discussion regarding some soon, because it's still unclear how things will go on during the council call, and depending on the discussion and council list, maybe we have to adjust our response. So we will keep you updated. And yeah. So thanks all, and see you soon. The call is adjourned for today.
Thank you very much, everyone, for attending the call.
Just saying you can stop the recording and disconnect all lines. Thank you so much for your time today. Good night.